Hey, it's Jordan. I recorded the running back rundown, human hand grenade snap reactions edition earlier today. And then, as I was about done recording, or just after it, came the news of the McCaffrey injury. So I'm going to tack this onto the front of that of this podcast, so you'll listen to this and then listen to the remainder of the podcast. I mean, obviously, it makes Chuba Hubbard immensely more valuable. I mean, would I sell him for a second? The problem is like, I don't. You're not really going to do much better than a second for Hubbard. You're not going to get much better. You're hoping for Chuba Hubbard in the second next year. So I would just hold at that point. Give me something more, right? Give me an upgrade to a core player. Give me an upgrade to a core pick, right? A second and Hubbard or something for a first. I would do that, assuming I'm not contending, right? Assuming I'm contending, I still think that's probably the right lean. I'd wonder where the pick is, right? If the pick's going to be late and I'm selling it to a contender, I'm not, and then I guess I'm moving from late second to early or to late first. I'd probably want to know a little bit more than that. I hate really helping a contender. I think ultimately the long-term play is like you want the pick. But I think I'd rather, that I think my inclination would be at that point, you take the pick. But I don't necessarily feel super great about doing that. I think you're going to look back in 6 months and think that you, like, hey, you're probably on the right side of that. Would sort of be my thing. And it feels definitely like one of those situations where if it hurts to do in the moment, it probably is the right thing to do. And that's kind of where my lean would be on doing that deal. So yeah, I think I would probably, if I could get a first, if I could go third to first, I'd feel better about that. Second to first, if assuming it's a late pick, late for late, or playoff for playoff, I'm probably willing to do that, especially if it's in super flex. I think that that is valuable. I was just looking down here the rest of the way schedule here for Carolina. So they are coming up on a bye. So it's week, they just finished week 12. They have a week 13 bye. Week 14, they have Atlanta, one of the better running back matchups out there. And then three matchups that are below average: Buffalo and Tampa, about neutral in terms of running back scoring, and then the Saints on the tougher end. So I would say it's neutral-ish with a good matchup in week 14, which again, then you look at the playoffs and it's not, it's neutral, right? So I do think the situation like this, it gives you options, right? And that's the thing with Chuba Hubbard, he gives you options. If he's your running back five right now, you feel really good about that because you have a starting option, starting role here coming forward. And so that's one of the reasons why I hesitate to sell for a second, because like he could be usable between now and then. You're not going to get that usability from that pick here before the championship, right? And then you're going to draft someone that's very similar as Chuba Hubbard. So that's how you end up in a chronic rebuild, right? That's that chronic rebuilding mentality, and we got to sort of break ourselves of that. So I think if it's a first, if it's a core asset, we're doing it. If we're just sort of pivoting at cost, I think that's a mistake. So that'll pretty much be it for that, and we'll watch for any additional roster moves that they might make. But again, they're coming up on a bye. So again, if for some reason Chuba Hubbard is available, this seems like a pretty close to a max bid type of situation the rest of the way. So I think the aggression there would be warranted. So I will enjoy the rest of the podcast with the idea that I didn't. When I recorded that, I obviously didn't know about the McCaffrey thing, so the Carolina stuff was outdated. All right, enjoy it. Talk to you soon. Keep embracing the variance. Welcome to the Analytics Dynasty Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. We are diving into the running back rundown here, looking over the human hand grenade index, trying to get an idea of where we're sharpening up our back of our roster spots and in potential spot starts here coming up. So we'll start off at the top, Zeke Elliott with the Dallas Cowboys. I was just checking out the game logs. So in the past 4 weeks, 20 touches, 13, 17, 15, 15. When you look at it, though, it's 49 total yards in week 12. He did have a touchdown and six catches, so it masked it a little bit. It is 68 total yards in week 11. Again, it's 15 touches and six of those are receptions, so it masks it a little bit, right? That's the value of catching a lot of balls because you make up for games like that. The game prior to that, which is week 10 against Atlanta, is 56 yards, again, two touchdowns, so it masks it. You go back to week 9 and see, this is kind of when you get in some of your trouble. It is 76 yards, three receptions, so again, you're looking at like a 10-point game there. And then 50 yards rushing in week 8 with 23 yards receiving and four receptions. So again, you get over that 10-point barrier, but that's not what you're shooting for with him. So when you look at this, the last time he's rushed for more than 51 yards was week 6. The last time he's had more than 40 yards through the air was week 6. He's only had more than 30 yards, more than 25 yards through the air once in that time. So not heading in the direction that we necessarily want. There is some thought that there's some injury stuff and maybe he is he's banged up. Well, I think there's no doubt that he's banged up at this point, but I think there's more of a question of, is this a thing where he could potentially sit out a week? They have this Thursday night game coming up off of having a Thursday night game. This is the worst matchup in terms of running backs of the week. So you look at it, it's all like that. It's not great. The Saints are really good against the run. So yeah, or against running back scoring in general. So yeah, I mean, this isn't a great situation. And even if Pollard comes in and gets a spot start, you don't feel great about it. I mean, you'll start him. I mean, this is full on Alexander Mattison theory. You look at this past game, the 29 combined touches. Again, even when you look at it, it's not like during the same period of time, I wouldn't consider there a huge difference between Zeke and Pollard just from the stat line. I mean, Zeke, in this last 5 weeks, Zeke's high is 50 yards. The same goes for Pollard. They look pretty similar in terms of rates and all that stuff. So it's clear that Zeke's the lead guy, right? And it's been 8 touches, 5 touches, 17, 9, and 14. That's from week 8 to week 12. I think you're still in this situation where it's a split. If Zeke is healthy, I still think Zeke is the lead back ahead of Pollard. I think, there's a couple spots that I have Pollard that I need a tight end, and I think I'm going to try and make a pivot there. And, people talk about Pollard being, this big threat to Zeke and everything. Pollard's played 40% of snaps 3 times this season. He's done it in week 5. He did it in week 10. And he did it in week 12. And on the flip side of that, Zeke hasn't played less than 50% of snaps. He's done that once. He played 49% in week 10. And I believe that was the blowout game. They blew out Atlanta 43-3. And then when you look at it, otherwise, he's played basically 2/3 of the snaps in every other game since week 8. And that's fully in line with what he was before. So I just think they're going through a little bit of a swoon right now. We'll hope to have a better stretch here going forward and maybe get Zeke healthy. If he takes a game off, it's probably not the worst thing in the world. And they do have some positive – they don't have any negative matchups here really forthcoming. It's a relatively neutral schedule. Washington, Giants, Washington, Arizona. The best matchup in there is the Giants. That would be in week 15. So we'll watch for that. I think the Zeke thing, definitely early in the week, practice status will be interesting. And remember, they are playing on Thursday this week. Okay, next up is Minnesota. So I talked about this in the Sunday night game, in the Sunday night storyline review pod, the week 12 storylines. And I think, we're looking at potentially a multi-week absence. This is a good matchup for Madison here against Detroit this week. It's interesting to note that Cook is playing with a torn labrum in his other shoulder. So we'll see, what the implications of this one is, right, and how bad this shoulder is. If it's a labrum tear, what's the sort of associated damage that goes along with the dislocation? I don't think you feel great about I don't think you feel great about Dalvin Cook if you're going to be starting him and having him in lineups at this point, just because you're worried about the aggravation. So I'm definitely going to be looking at that aspect of, if it's Dr. Jean or Dr. Chow or anyone else out there doing some analysis of these, I want to know that risk. I think that's important. Again, you're playing him in that same running back one, running back two type landscape that he's been performing when he's healthy, but it's not going to give you warm and cozy feelings. I think Alexander Mattison, he's going to be a top 10 projection this week. He should be anyways. People tend to not elevate them to the, to the level that they should. And this is a clear indication of, this is a clear Madison theory, full effect type deal. When you have a backup running back, that's good. They tend to consolidate the workload better than, better than the starter actually does. So, Alexander Mattison theory in full effect here going forward. Good couple matchups here down the stretch. Okay, New Orleans. Alvin Kamara, we'll hope to see him back this week. You got Ingram starting, hopefully, if Kamara's not there. So we're going to be watching both of those guys in terms of their early practice reports. When you look at how the workload spread out last week, it was Tony Jones heavily involved. He had 16 carries for 27 yards. He was not involved in the receiving game. Ty Montgomery, 6 for 14 rushing, and then he had 5 catches for 31 yards. So that's when you look at some of the split stuff, you wonder how big of a ceiling someone like Tony Jones can have if it's going to be Ty Montgomery having the work share out of the receiving game out of that backfield. So that'll be, again, and then we'll see how the pieces of this come back together here going forward, and hope that Kamara is healthy. And, this is sort of in line for the Kamara return, his time frame to return anyway. So this will be a firm early week type situation to watch. Also, when you watch when you actually look at where the snaps of Ty Montgomery came, I think it is instructive. 25 of his snaps were out of the backfield. He hadn't had more than 10 at any of the point that was in week 7. He's only had 5 weeks this season where he has had snaps out of the backfield. This is the one that has the vast, vast majority of them. The first time he's had anything close to a majority, and he smashed, 25 of his 31 snaps were out of the backfield. So that gives you an indication on his usage. When you compare him and Tony Jones ran only 3 routes. So that should give you an indication of sort of what the game plan is. I think Montgomery might be streamable in the event that, Tony Jones gets another start and Kamara and Ingram are out. Our threat of injuries continues here with Detroit, and yet DeAndre Swift will be watching for his injury status. He's dealing with suffered it on Thanksgiving shoulder, so we'll see here. It looks minor and day to day was sort of the note there that came along with it. So hopeful there. If not, if I'm feeling you can start Jamal Williams. Again, this could be a Alexander Mattison theory, maybe not to the same extent, but Jamal Williams did see 63% of the snaps this past week, 20 for DeAndre Swift, 10 for Jamar Jefferson, Godwin Igwebuke, 8%. So that gives you some idea of the indication of being, you know, 3-1, something in that usage pattern of Jamal Williams ahead of those other two guys combined. Maybe that changes a bit if it's going to be a full game of Jamal Williams. But I think that this doesn't appear to be a long-term injury, I think is probably the key thing to keep in mind with all of this. Jamal Williams was 15 for 65 on the ground and, you know, graded out fine. Nothing super outstanding in either direction. It was a pretty moderate game in terms of his stats. And he ran 14 routes compared to 9 between Godwin Igwebuke and 6 for Godwin Igwebuke had 3. Swift had 6 for a total of 9 between the two of them. So a favorable split there for Williams. So I think you feel okay about him going forward in the in the nearish term. They are home against Minnesota, and those games stay close, so that could be a game where he could potentially be a spot start. So definitely scooping up shares. I think the next best bet after that probably Jamar Jefferson, but I think him and Igwebuke probably split some snaps would be my thought. When the two of them have played this year, they've played about the same. They've played, I think, 19 snaps total in the two in the three games that they've both been active. So I'm pretty. It looks like a pretty clear time split between the two of them. Nick Chubb returned, Kareem Hunt returned. Nick Chubb at the lead back. Dearness Johnson. I'm floating Dearness Johnson back to waiver wires when I can't. You know, if I have other people, and this week I think I will. So I'm floating Dearness Johnson back out there. This is Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt's backfield. Feel confident about Nick Chubb, running back 1. Kareem Hunt probably more running back 2. Flex consideration at this point. This offense is beaten down, so taking kind of a beating. All right, next up is the Rams. And it is it's Darrell Henderson. Again, he's becoming a bit of an aggregator at this point in terms of his production. 81% snap share. That is his highest since week 7. So it gives you an idea. I mean, he has a consolidated job, and that's a good thing. It hasn't been the most cashed in opportunity. So when you look back, he's 58 yards in week 9. 41 yards on 9 touches in week 10. They were off week 11, and then he had 20 touches this past week. He scores a touchdown, 4 catches. So again, that number gets inflated, but it's 73 yards, total yards. So he hasn't gone over 100 yards since week 6. He had a stretch of games where he was over 100 yards, then he had 99, then over 100 yards again. Just hasn't gotten to that level. So we'll see. They're in the midst of a 3-game swoon here. They need to get right. They will get an opportunity this week against Jacksonville, being a big home favorite. Maybe put it on them a bit and get things sorted out and right going forward. So that would be the thing. It's notable Odell Beckham Jr. looked, you know, he did look more involved this week. Looks like they got some stuff for him packaged up. So we'll see there. Sony Michel, clear injury away guy for the Rams. Aaron Jones was active and didn't. It was very much the AJ Dillon show. It was 51-49 in terms of snap shares. We don't have the full on breakdown of all the PFF stuff yet because it was a later game. I'm recording this early on Monday morning, so we don't have the full, like the afternoon games take a bit to come out. So But it was a breakdown of 25 touches for Dylan, 10 for Aaron Jones. And Aaron Jones was in on some of the passing game stuff. So he wasn't involved in the passing game, but I saw him running specifically like routes and stuff. A.J. Dillon, you know, saves a fantasy day, scores a touchdown, 5 catches, 21 yards. So that's a total of 90 total yards and 5 catches. So basically a 20-point fantasy game. So you'll take that. I benched him over, I played him over Fournette in one spot. So fortunately, it didn't cost me a victory. Again, sometimes we think too much about lineup decisions, but that's another example of that. Yeah, this is a clear situation where I think Dylan's the injury away guy. And this, they're on a bye. I think Aaron Jones comes back in week 14, and it's probably the same situation that it was here in weeks past. So I don't think there's a ton here to really mix us up here going forward. It's pretty clear in terms of the situation. All right, Kansas City, they were on a bye. So we'll be watching for the return, and how Clyde Edwards-Helaire looks down the stretch. I think that'll be interesting. You know, with some time off, maybe he was actually a little bit fresher. Leonard Fournette smashes Tampa this week. Again, it was a Ronald Jones, I'm not going to say garbage time touchdown, but it was a clean up the remains type touchdown. So he got the leftovers, if you will, to use a metaphor for your Thanksgiving holiday. 24 touches for Fournette, 7 for Ronald Jones, 0 for Giovanni Bernard. Don't have the snap counts yet either because it was a later game. But this is, you know, it falls in line with the workload for Fournette. He's been above 50% snaps every week since week 3. So I think with that, he's been above 50% of snaps every week but week 3. So when you look at that, and that was the Giovanni Bernard game, that was the high water mark of the Giovanni Bernard experience. So I think when you look at that, it kind of tells you, that Giovanni Bernard experience is sort of faded away, and it's a Fournette bell cow experience, and we're honestly pretty darn happy about it. I do think Ronald Jones is interesting from enough of usage this year that he could potentially be valuable as a free agent. I'm not sure if it might not be better than the situation he has right now in terms of like an injury away type situation. But I do think he lands someplace. This isn't a situation he's going to wash out at the end of his, at the end of his rookie deal or anything like that. Next up is Tennessee, and basically a 50-50 snap split between Dontrell Hilliard and Deonta Foreman. So it's worth noting last week, 63% Hilliard, 19% Foreman. This week, 51% Hilliard, 49% Foreman. So draw from that, I guess, what you will in terms of that usage. I think it's a 50-50 split. It's probably the best example of this. And when you look at, when you look at it, it says, okay, hey, Hilliard had the big game. He actually graded out pretty well from PFF. Some of these PFF ones I'm actually incorporating they're becoming available while I'm recording. So if you hear me talk about some and not the other, that's the reason why. I think part of last week could have been the negative game script. When you look at last week, Hilliard had 8 receptions, for example, and they lost by 2 scores. So I think that could probably speak to some of the reason why over the past 2 games, like, there has been a disparity. 15 routes this week for Hilliard, 9 for Foreman. When you look at last week, it was a split of 37 for Hilliard, 7 for Foreman. So much less of that passing game work this week. That's probably part of the reason for the disparity between them. And again, there's been some thought that maybe AP will actually come back. I'm not sure, but I think in games where there's projected to be some positive game script, might feel confident about Foreman in that role. They want to pound the rock and do that. One thing I'll say too is, as we look forward here, they're coming up on a bye, and we've seen in prior iterations, in prior years, where there has been don't know if stagnating offense is the right word, or changing personnel or any of that stuff. You know, the greatest example that comes to mind is definitely Philly when they lost Wentz, and they basically remade the offense during a bye week. And I think a lot of that, like, we could see some of that with Foreman here. So that's definitely reflects sort of who they were pre-Henry injury. So I'd be interested to see sort of what their offense looks like when they come back. But I think that we have an idea of how this offense is going to look. McNichols will be a complicating factor, and I'll be interested to see once they come back what it would be. But I think that that probably cuts more into the Hilliard work share than it does necessarily the Foreman one at this point. Turning next to Atlanta, and this is a huge performance by Cordarrelle Patterson. So we see him basically almost entirely in the role of running back in this one. So I think there's probably some moving pieces in this one. I think you can probably cut your Wayne Gallman shares, would sort of be my inclination there. And then Allison. So there's a couple of moving pieces to this one. Allison was out this week with he had an illness, so they didn't actually activate him off the practice squad. So they've got that weird practice squad role there. They didn't activate him off of it this week, so he was unable to play. So that is, I think, an aspect of this that we're unsure of. I think you can cut Gallman. It would be my take. He's playing behind Mike Davis. Mike Davis actually graded out better than Gallman did for PFF. They're largely similar. I mean, it was 5 carries, 16 yards for Davis, 4 for 19 for Gallman. And then when you look at the routes, Davis ran 13 routes to 1 for Gallman. So Gallman definitely strikes as the guy that's not particularly fantasy useful. I think you maybe hold Davis. The problem is it's a rough injury away upside situation. That's probably my concern with it at this point. So I'm moving Allison and Davis together in a tier, and then Gallman's after them. And I think Gallman's cuttable. So Cordarrelle Patterson should be an every week starter. All right, next up is your New England Patriots. So again, this one's coming into a Monday night game against the Bills. So that'll be interesting here. Split shares of snaps, 37% for Damian Harris, 33% for Ramondre Stevenson, and 32% for Brandon Bolden. That fits very similar to past weeks. The week 11 performance here, 39% for Harris, 34% for Stevenson, 27% for Bolden. So that it very much in the post dual concussion world, right, where Stevenson came back a week earlier than Harris did. This very much looks like a pure timeshare. It was sort of trending that way beforehand, in week 9. It was before the week 10 missed time. It was basically 39%, 27%, 47%. That's 39% Harris, 27% Stevenson, 47% Bolden. So there's a good mix there in terms of how they're being used. I think that caps the upside of any of them, though that's my big concern. I think either of them have really good injury away potential in the event that either Harris or Stevenson suffer a further injury. When you look at it, I mean, the numbers are pretty good too in terms of how they're performing. It's just the volume just not there. So I think this is one where you look at it and it's pretty clear to me about how this thing unfolds going forward. It's they're locked in a timeshare. They're running back 2-3 types for the immediate future. They're grading out very similarly in terms of PFF grades, for example. And Stevenson forced 4-3 missed tackles to 0 for Harris. He did more work after contact as well. Harris had a bunch more stuff blocked up for him than Stevenson did. So I mean, that's really the tale of where they're at. And then you look, it's their total share in terms of their splits, routes as well. 6 for Stevenson, 7 for Harris. So this is basically a pure split between these two guys. And I think either of them benefit pretty massively from an injury to the other one. All right, turn into Las Vegas, and we're getting score, we're getting production out of Josh Jacobs in a in a volume role, in a touchdown based role, I guess at this point. It's not super upside. You know, this is the highest rushing performance of the season for him in terms of yardage. It's the most touches on the season for him in terms of yardage. He has a touchdown, so this goes down as one of his better games. Is it overall difference-making, season-changing statistical production? At this point, no. At this point, he's very much in the running back two type role. You know, I have some spots this week where I didn't play him. I think he's very much a matchup guy. At this point, even in a what would be considered a quote good week, he was running back. He's up to running back 23 on the season. So I think that'll go up again. It's 9 games. So when you look at him, he's basically averaging 14 a game. So again, that's fine. And I have a couple of spots with him, like. So I like the profile of the hit, and like, again, if he's healthy, he'll probably hit again, right? I mean, this is kind of the thing with him. What concerns me a little bit is some of the upside stuff. Where do you get a big time difference making? But the flip side of that, like he said, 4 or more catches in 3 of the past 4 games. He didn't this past week, but he had a touchdown, right? So he had 4 catches in week 9, 5 in week 10, 5 in week 11. And when you sort of, that basically close to replicates a touchdown. So, you know, there was some concern with him coming into the season about his receiving work share and that sort of stuff. Like, he's got 30 catches on the season in 9 games. So you're fine there. I mean, that's fine. What you just haven't gotten is the big rushing production. He just hasn't been able to mix the two of being basically a 50 catch guy, and scoring double digit touchdowns. You just haven't really gotten that yet out of him. So we'll see how the end of the season goes. And I think this is definitely a team in flux. He's very much fitting in the running back two landscape. They get a good matchup against Washington this week, whose defense has generally struggled this year. I think Peyton Barber is probably your injury away guy from the running back, the running centric role. Again, what does that offer in terms of ceiling? I mean, we saw 23 for 111 in week 3, and then we've seen 1 carry since then. So I think that kind of tells us that was a Jacobs out game. In both games that Jacobs was out, Peyton Barber was. He had 36 carries between the two of them. And you saw Drake be generally the same type of usage, which was 7-8 touches, 5 or so catches. That's sort of the range that he worked in. So this one's a pretty clear and static situation for me. There are situations where you can probably sit Josh Jacobs in any given week. Jonathan Taylor, smash in Indy. He's starting every week. He's running back 1. Yeah, on the season. I think Mack and Hines, I think this is a relatively clear situation. All right, turning next to Baltimore, and we've got the return of Latavius Murray. So Devonta Freeman had basically consolidated the role. Now with Latavius Murray back, Devonta Freeman, same role. 58% snaps in week 9, 58% snaps in week 10, 58% in week 11. That was the first game that Murray was back. Murray had 37% that week. In this week 12 game, which is really tough to watch at times, 49% for Freeman, 44% for Murray. So it's trending, it's still Freeman in the lead, but it's trending a little bit more towards a timeshare. We'll see if that's a one-off situation or not. I think at this point you're probably, I would feel more comfortable starting Freeman just because I think that's, what we've seen is that he's going to get the most opportunity. I have a little, this isn't a situation where I love to be in. This feels a little bit like a lesser man's version of the Patriots at this point. So that's the rub there. Okay. Next up is the San Francisco 49ers, and this is a, I think, a pretty clear situation. It's Elijah Mitchell, when healthy, is the lead back. It's Jeff Wilson is the second in priority, it appears, at this point. He's definitely ahead of Sermon, and Jamichael Hasty's out, so we'll see how that situation unfolds. But Sermon did get hurt this past week, so we'll see. I saw that it might have been a leg. I haven't seen more of that. So I think the clear situation here is it's Wilson, it's Hasty, and then it is it's Sermon there. We'll see what the the prognosis on Sermon's injury. I think this is clearing up in terms of in terms of confidence, and it'll be interesting to see what the impact of Debo will be. All right, Pittsburgh, and this is a this offense is kind of trending in a bad direction here as we get into the twilight of Ben's career. We get 75% from Najee Harris this week. Or last week, we get 58% this week, which, like, hey, there's some workload there to see. Not so fast. And week 11, 13% for Balazs, 12% for Benny Snell. In week 12, it's 19% for Anthony McFarlane, 13% for Balazs, and 11% for Snell. So I think this situation is one you can take your preferred shot, I guess. But I don't think that there's a clear answer here. And even if we get a, even if we get a clear start situation out of one of these guys, I don't know who it's going to be. So that's the problem that I have at this point. Arizona's on a bye, so we'll watch the return of Kyler Murray from, from his injuries. And Chase Edmonds is on IR, so we'll watch that. Carolina, oh, and James Conner should be, he's in a good position to be a start. Just the workload's really there, and he's a touchdown guy too. It's a pretty good lucrative combination between the two. Between the two, they should be a favorite against Chicago as well. Next up is your Carolina Panthers. Again, McCaffrey in a walking boot. It looks like it's kind of a lesser injury. I think the solution is pretty clear here. It's Chuba Hubbard, and he's the injury away guy. So I think that's pretty pretty clear on both of those fronts. So I'm moving him up in terms of priority on both. So next up is Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams. Pure split in Denver. I saw Melvin Gordon got banged up a bit returned. So that'll be a situation to monitor. Otherwise, it's a pure time split. Barkley's, I think, a clear starter in with the Giants. I question the upside of him ultimately. I mean, that's, I have a couple of teams where I've got some injury away guys that are coming in, like Madison and stuff. Like, I think I might be in a better position to play Madison than to play Barkley. 13 for 40. I don't know what we're, and then you get three touches here for Booker, right? This just isn't that valuable of a situation. It's just, at this point, that's part of the problem. So he hasn't done a lot. So we'll see what specific matchups look like. But I don't think starting Madison over Barkley at this point is unreasonable at all. So I'll be watching for how that unfolds. Again, I'm not making that call at this point in the week, but I think it's going to be a situation to watch on some of our rosters. All right, Chicago with David Montgomery, lead back. Pretty clear situation there. I think Herbert's your injury away guy there. Mixon having one of the best seasons of his career. It's P. Ryan, his backup. So that's that's pretty I think that one's pretty clear. And we've seen with P. Ryan that he has some upside in weeks where you have where you have, whether it's a mix in injury or mix in, you know, missing some time or whatever. So that is good to see. Miles Sanders here. I saw the joke on Twitter that, you know, why do the Eagles just hate Miles Sanders? He actually graded out pretty well, but carried behind Boston Scott. So Boston Scott goes 15 rushes, 64 yards. Miles Sanders goes 9 rushes, 64 yards. Boston Scott has both a touchdown and a fumble. Miles Sanders, 9 receiving routes, Boston Scott, 12. So when you look at that combo, like, it's a really tough situation to get fully on board with committing to Sanders at this point, even though, like, this is trending in a situation which this offense should be good for Sanders. So that's a bummer. Over the past 2 weeks, Sanders has out-touched Boston Scott, so he was better than him in week 11. So maybe this is an aberration or they didn't like what they see. I'm not sure. Last week's game was graded particularly poorly for Miles Sanders, for what it's worth. According to PFF, he had their worst game in the backfield last week. So even though he went 16 for 94. So just some things to keep in mind there with him. I think it's not an entirely confident situation. I think you're probably in the flex consideration with Miles Sanders and Boston Scott at this point, especially when Jordan Howard is out. Okay, turning next to the to Seattle. So they are Monday night, so we'll watch that. Jacksonville. It's James Robinson is the guy, and it's Carlos Hyde behind him, I think is clear. They did work a little bit closer this week in terms of it was 52% for James Robinson, 44% for Hyde, which is actually one of the high water marks of the season for Hyde. So watch that. I haven't seen a specific like injury concern or anything for anything new for Robinson. I know he was dealing with being a little bit banged up earlier on, you know, coming into the week, but haven't seen anything new, so we'll be watching that. And it was actually Hyde getting a lot of receiving snap shares this week, 21 for him, 16 for Robinson, even though Robinson goes 3 for 29 in the receiving game. So that's something to watch for. I'm not super worried about it. All right, and I feel confident James Robinson is probably in that running back 1-2 fringe. Okay, next up here is the New York Jets. And so this is a moving situation with Michael Carter on IR. I saw that news over the weekend. I think notable there. Tevin Coleman, 16 carries, 67 yards. So he outgrades and outperforms Ty Johnson, outsnaps Ty Johnson. Ty Johnson, 6 for 42. Tevin Coleman did a lot of his work after contact, forced 3 missed tackles as well. When you look at the receiving share, this is the thing that is concerning to me. When you look at the receiving share, 10 routes for Ty Johnson, 7 for Tevin Coleman. So our assumption there that Tevin Coleman would be just largely run-centric, not so fast. So I think at this point, you're probably not starting either of these guys while Carter is out. But I think this is much more of a split now than I thought it would be, Ty Johnson being the more valuable guy in the backfield. Okay, next up is Houston, and you've got Rex Burkhead, and you've got David Johnson in what should have been a really good situation this week, and it ultimately kind of fizzled. And so that's what you're dealing with when you're in this range of the position. You don't have 8. I mean, there's a reason why these guys are where they are. 61% snap share for Burkhead, 39% for David Johnson. I mean, this is just a weekly thing. They're basically, you know, bumping back and forth. In the past 4 weeks, there's been 2 with Burkhead having more touches, 2 with David Johnson, with more snaps. This is the high water mark of anyone in this backfield all year in terms of percentage of snaps. So 61% for Burkhead. So I'm not sure how much I sort of trust any of that. I think the big thing is the routes, which is notable. 17 routes for Burkhead, only 8 for David Johnson. So I would be surprised if that continues. Again, they combined for 22 carries for less than 70 yards. So that's where we're at with this backfield. Don't feel confident about it other than a desperation flex. Okay, Myles Gaskin is in Miami, has a good game this past week. I think he's running back two flex consideration depending on what the waiver wire situation is. 50% for him, 20% for Philip Lindsay. That's a notable uptick there. Duke Johnson didn't play, so maybe we float Duke Johnson back to the waiver wire, maybe add Lindsay on our waiver wire list this week and potentially cut Duke Johnson. We thought we had a beat on that one, and it doesn't look like we were right. So those things happen. Okay, next up is the Bills. Again, we're scooping up any Breida shares. They're probably already gone, but Zach Moss actually sits this past week. I think this is trending towards a Matt Breida. Like, Matt Breida is what they need, and I sort of hope that they go with that. But I'm putting Matt Breida and Devin Singletary in the starter column together at this point. You could pitch me next week on it being not that case. So we'll watch there and see. But I think this is trending towards – it's just trending in the right way for Matt Breida. We just hope that he can stay healthy. I mean, that's always been the concern with him. Next up is the L.A. Chargers, and it's Austin Eckler. I saw he had a drop basically that became a pick six, which is never great, but we're not super worried about that. 70% of the snap share. It's 25% for – it's like this is the thing with them, right? So last week it was 25% for Larry Roundtree, 7% for Justin Jackson on 70% snap share for Eckler. This week, 68% snap share for Eckler. That's the only thing that's consistent. He's basically between 60 and 75% every week. 23% for Josh Kelly, 10% for Darius Bradwell. I mean, you might as well just – it's a total – if I could put something below low in terms of confidence, I would put it there. All right, last but not least, Antonio Gibson is your starter in Washington. And, I hesitate to believe that they're going to actually give J.D. McKissic, a 20-touch workload. So I'm still rostering Jarrett Patterson. That's I don't know what to what to do other than that. I mean, McKissic is potentially a value there, but I struggle to see how that situation as an injury away is going to make a huge, huge difference. I question Jarrett Patterson being J.D. McKissic being the clear injury away guy. When you look this past week, they split carries. So it was 7 carries for McKissic and it was 7 carries for Patterson behind 19 for Gibson. So it was sort of get the spread there. Not a ton of clarity. I think ultimately I'd probably feel most confident in starting McKissic, but I think Patterson would see the most running back touches. All right, that'll do it for this edition. Until next time, continue embracing the variance. We'll talk again very soon.